Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2012 Home Education Conference held in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Angela Baker, and this is Mentoring Your Children's Sweet Spot, or THUD. That's for the recorded people. Well, I'm very excited to share this with you this morning. Really excited. In fact, I am so passionate about what I'm going to share this morning that maybe one day I'll write a book when I have time. But there is so much that we can learn about mentoring our children. And last year at this conference, I gave a class called Parent Mentoring. And I went home and I spent the entire summer studying what that really means. And then at the end of the summer, and I tried to write it, but it just wouldn't come. And at the end of the summer, I just got the strongest impression that now I needed to live what I had just learned over the summer. So I'm going to share with you some of what I have learned over the past year. I'm going to say right up front that I do not do this perfectly, that I am working at this. This is a principle that I will continue to work at for a very, very long time. Actually, I think I'll be working on it throughout the eternities. But so that's just the way it is. So how many of you, just by show of hands, have children that are only 10 years and younger? Okay, oh, gosh, most of you, okay? How many of you then have, just raise your hands so I can see, children that are older 10? Older than 10, yeah. Okay. And of all of you, how many of you have tried to actually have mentor meetings with your children? Okay. Some. And on a scale of 1 to 10, a mentor meeting, well, there's this idea out there that you have a regular meeting with your child and talk with them and...
every night?
No, like every week or every month. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's cool. So when you have mentor meetings with your children, on a scale of 1 to 10, how satisfied are you with those mentor meetings? So I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, and you get to show me with your hands just how satisfied you are with those meetings. Ready? What? 10 is high. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Raise them high. I want to see. Okay. How satisfied are you with your mentor meetings? Pretty satisfied?
Yes.
Cool. If they're happening every night, man, your child probably just really wants them.
Well, okay, so some nights I'm
not. Okay. All right. So what I get here is a hesitancy, like, I'm not really sure how good this is working. I really want it to work. How many of you have this wonderful picture of what you think it could look like? And you go, gosh, why can't I make that work? Anybody? Yeah. Okay, so you go, oh, yeah, that's how you do it. I'm going to go home. Okay, come on over here. I want to talk with you. And you start talking, and you get something that looks kind of like this, okay? The thud, okay? I mean, have you ever experienced this? You can just, even if they don't put their hand up, you can feel, just don't get any closer. Look at that dad up there. Poor guy. You know, it's a lot of times when I've had parent mentor meetings with my daughters, it turns out that they cry for an hour and a half, and I cannot figure out why they are crying for, you know, the whole time. And I think we should probably come to a resolution, and they should probably stop crying before we leave so that we feel happy, right? Okay, but these are so real. Look at this one on the couch. I mean, my gosh. I'm not looking at you. You're not looking at me. And this is our parent mentor meeting, okay? And we laugh, but this is so real. And guess what? Every parent experiences it, even those parents who can say, yeah, I feel really good about my parent mentor meetings. I think they're awesome. I think we're doing really great, but there are always the thuds. Well, the way I learned about parent mentoring is I had a lot of thuds. And sometimes I would have a sweet spot where it really went well. And I'd go, wow, why did that work? Why did that not work? And I began to ask those questions. And I wanted to figure out what makes it work, what doesn't make it work, and why the thud, and I wanted to start having more sweet spots. Louisa May Alcott has something to say about parent mentoring. Fathers and mothers are too absorbed in business and housekeeping to study their children and cherish that sweet and natural confidence which is a child's surest safeguard and a parent's subtlest power. Okay, a notice that she's talking about studying our children, and that by the nature of what we do, we get all caught up in housekeeping and business and our life, making things happen, putting bread on the table, making sure the children have clothes to wear, and the busy of every life. So she goes on to say, so the young hearts hide trouble or temptation till the harm is done and mutual regret comes too late. This quote is not about making you feel guilty, okay? That's not what this quote is about. Then she goes on to say, I'm going to continue with that quote. So here's the sweet spot. I love these pictures. It shows just by their demeanor what's happening. There's something really, really happening there. And I think every one of us can relate to a sweet spot, even if it's just one sweet spot. And we can hold on to that sweet spot. Well, she goes on to say, happy the boys and girls who tell all things freely to father or mother, sure of pity, help, and pardon. And thrice happy the parents who, out of their own experiences and by their own virtues, can teach and uplift the souls for which they are responsible. Did you catch that? It's about from our own experiences, by our own virtues, we have the capacity to lift and teach the souls for which we are responsible. Now, I think that what has helped me tremendously with my ability to mentor my children has been two experiences. You can't really fast forward your life to have these experiences for those of you who still have children 10 and younger. But the first experience was when my husband and I drove my son. He was 18, and we drove him to George Wythe College, 4 hours away from our house, and we helped him get set up in his apartment, and we took him to Walmart and so we could shop and get some food for him. And then he began saying, well, I don't want to get that. That costs too much. Well, I don't need peanut butter, and I don't need bread, and I'll be just fine. And I began to think, oh, my goodness, is he prepared for this? And not only was it that, but that, you know, he was going to be going to college. And I began to think, oh, this is what it's all about. It's about teaching them to fly on their own, to be prepared for the day they walk out of the door and they're on their own. But it doesn't just happen like that. There are years of incremental development and years of interaction and years of choices and decisions and relationship experiences that bring them to that point. Happy to say he did just fine. He told us about how he would get to Walmart in his backpack. He could only buy enough that would fit in the backpack. And he told us about how he transported eggs in his backpack. Made me a little nervous, but he survived. So another experience, though, and this one is probably even more profound. A year and a half ago, I had the privilege of taking my second child, a daughter, Erin, to BYU, Idaho for an audition. She's a violinist, and she was very nervous, very, very nervous. And I don't know if you've ever experienced an audition before or performed in front of, you know, someone who's really good before, but she was extremely nervous. Very excited. She had worked hard. She'd been working for 7 months on the pieces that she was going to play for this professor. So we got to his door. It was time to be there. And she looked at me and she said, oh, Mama, I can't knock on the door. You knock on the door for me. And I realized in that moment and responded, Erin, I can't knock on this door for you. You have to knock on this door, and you have to walk through the door. I can't do that for you. She knocked on the door. She walked through it. She survived the audition, received a scholarship, and walked out beaming. That's what parent mentoring is. We bring them literally to the door, the doors that they must knock on that they must walk through. We cannot do that for them. It's not about protecting them from those doors or walking through those doors. It's about preparing them to walk through those doors. That's what we're trying to accomplish with parent mentoring. Having a bigger vision of what we're trying to accomplish helps us then with a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, that's where we're headed. That's really where we're headed. After those experiences, especially with my son, I thought, oh, now I know what I'm doing with these younger kids. Poor boy, the older one. Now I know what I'm doing with the younger kids. Here we go, you know. And I started to redouble my efforts in a different way, knowing that, oh, gosh, that kid's got to learn a little bit of character here. And so rather than saying, oh, that's okay if you don't do that, no, here's a door. You need to knock on that door. You need to walk through that door, because later you're going to have a harder door to knock on and a harder door to go through. So basically, parent mentoring is about studying the children and cherishing that confidence, using our experiences and our virtues to teach and uplift the souls for which we are responsible. It's about creating a connection and a relationship of trust and openness, so that when it comes to the point where it's time for them to knock on a door, or when it's time for you to invite them to do something hard, they can trust you and say, okay, I'm in. Today we're going to be talking so that's kind of a brief thing about what is mentoring. I'm curious to know, how many of you have really ever heard much about mentoring? Okay, just a few. How many of you have ever been mentored by somebody? Okay, a few. Mentoring is really not part of our culture, not that much. Now, there's a lot of different kinds of mentoring, and I can say that I've been mentored by Sherry Dew because I've read Sherry Dew's books. It's a type of mentoring. It's not a personal one-on-one mentoring, but I've been mentored by Sherry Dew or Ardeth Kapp or Gordon B. Hinckley because of that. Those connections. So reading a book from somebody is a type of mentoring. However, it's not the one-on-one mentoring. Mentoring really is about saying, who are you? What do you want to accomplish? And how can I help you get there? So mentoring is basically, I was explaining this to somebody last night, it's you go to somebody who is further down the path where you want to be, and you ask them, how did you get here? How can I get there? This is what I want to accomplish. Can you help me? That's what mentoring is. As I've learned about mentoring, I've asked myself a lot of times, what do I want for my daughter or for my son? What do I want for them? And bottom line, there are just a few basic things that I really want for them. This is an important question for you to ask yourself. What do you want? And I've come to the conclusion that for me, I want them to know how to lead themselves, to know how to problem solve, to know how to set a goal and go for it. I think I'm getting ahead of myself, so it's probably going to get a little disjointed here. Let's go. I want to share some examples from classics. There are some great examples of what mentoring is in the classics. So I've listed here 3 books that I have learned a tremendous amount from about mentoring. So Little Britches by Ralph Moody. How many of you have ever read it? Okay, now this is a tremendous book. I want to ask the question, what is Ralph's father mentoring him in? Life? Character,
self-sufficiency,
and there's all of that in there. All of that kind of is grouped into one thing, bottom line. Ralph Moody is being mentored by his father in how to be a man. What it is to be a father, what it is to be a brother, what it is to be a husband. So that's a beautiful example. Read it. If you've read it, read it again, and this time look specifically for how the mentoring takes place, what it looks like, what it feels like. Little Men by Louisa May Alcott is an awesome book about mentoring. She starts this school for boys, she and her husband, And they're, some of them are orphan boys, some of them are boys that come from just all different kinds of backgrounds. But on a weekly basis, on Sunday evening, she has this book that she gets out, and she has a meeting with each of the boys. And some of them are working, well, they're working on weaknesses that they have, character things, like being honest or being diligent in their studies or in their responsibilities. But she keeps track. But this meeting that she has with them is very inspiring to them, and they want so much to please her and do well that it really keeps them moving forward in their lives towards to growing and becoming better people. Her husband also has a certain type of mentoring with these boys, and so more of an academic mentoring. I'd encourage you to read Little Men also for this example of mentoring. And then there's The Chosen by Chaim Potok, which you could say, oh, well, gosh, that's kind of controversial. One father really wasn't mentoring his son. He was ignoring his son, not talking to him. If you know the story, there's two Jewish boys, and they become friends, and one father has decided to raise his son in silence. He doesn't speak to his son. He's a rabbi, a very well-loved spiritual leader. He believes that that's the best thing for his son. The other father talks to his son all the time and really works with him and ends up mentoring the boy who's being raised in silence as well. But there are two different models of mentoring and doing what you think you need, these fathers doing what they think they need, their sons need for them to grow into manhood. So those are some examples of classics. I encourage you to read them and look for principles of mentoring. Okay, so today what we're going to spend most of our time on is this model, sweet spot mentor model. This I just realized as I was looking at why was I having thuds, what happened when it was working, that there were certain elements that worked. And I also learned by having it modeled for me, by being mentored and by having people teach me this. So in order to learn how to mentor, it's pretty important to be mentored. I've had several people ask me yesterday, well, where do I find a mentor? How do I find a mentor? How do I go about doing that? And the best thing I can say is you look into your life, into all the associations that you have, and you find somebody that you admire and someone that is further along the path than you and doing something that you want to do, and you ask them, could you please help me to know how you got there? Would you be my mentor? Go ahead. Excellent. Excellent. So she said to look on the TG Ed Marketplace website. There are some mentors. I don't know how many are listed there at this point. Hopefully it's growing. But the need for mentors is really big. So you might need an academic mentor, a scholar mentor. You might need someone to help you figure out how to do it in your home type thing. There's a lot of variety of reasons to need a mentor. But being mentored is really important. So this model, it's interactive. It doesn't have a starting place. You don't always start with ask. You don't always start with respond. You don't always start with listen. You just start where it feels right. We're going to talk about each one of these. But as we go through the model, the purpose of the model is to answer this question, what do they need? And then respond accordingly. That's what our goal is, to answer the question, what do they need? And then to respond to the answer. So as we go through the model, keep that in mind. That's the overarching question, what do they need? And then when the answer comes, then you respond to it. So first thing, you ask. Well, not first thing, right? It's one of the things, because we're not going to do this in any specific order. Here are some suggestions of questions you might ask. These are not the only questions. But we go into question mode in a mentor-type situation. We want to know them. We want to understand them. And we do it sincerely, not with the intent of manipulating them to do what we want them to do. Kids can feel that a mile away, and they will just put the walls up and go like this. So what are you excited about? I love that question. What do you need? In a big family at my house, that's a really important question because sometimes I forget to ask, I need a new toothbrush, Mom. I've had this one for a year, whatever. I mean, they do. They tell me little things like that. Gosh, Mom, my socks are really holy. Could I get some new socks, things like that. I've had them say, I just need to go on a walk with you. I just need more time with you. What do you want? This is so important. If you ask them what they want, that is so crucial to inspiring them. What do you want to accomplish? What are you struggling with? One I like to ask is, how are your relationships with your sister or your brother? How do you feel about that? I've had some pretty cool interchanges with my children just by asking that question. Would you tell me about, you know, whatever you want to have them tell you about? And how can I help you? What can I do for you? Another question I've used is, how do you like me to show you that I love you? How do you feel love from me? And it's different for every person, so it's pretty good to ask these questions to get clear about what it is. On this, what do you want, I want to just share a story. A while ago, I took my daughter to a flute performance, and it was kind of like a recital. And there were girls from all over the place and a boy or two that had performed. And in the restroom afterwards, I was standing next to another mother, and she said to me, how do you get your daughter to practice? You have ever wondered how to get your children to practice? Well, the question actually took me completely by surprise. I stepped back, I thought, but I don't get her to practice. She practices. Well, it goes back to something very simple, that when she was 8 and wanted to play the piano, we started her on the piano. And I thought that was great. We have a piano, I know how to do the piano, and piano's so good for you. And after a while, she said, Mom, I really don't want to play the piano. I really don't like playing the piano. I really want to play the flute. So years ago, she chose something she wanted. And she was 10 when she began. And she was old enough to make that choice. And she wants it. It's part of who she is. Now, with my older son, I was not so good at that. At age 8, I said, piano would be good for you. You're going to take piano lessons. And he's such a compliant, obedient child. Okay, Mom, I will take piano lessons. He didn't mind practicing. He kind of liked it. He didn't like the lessons too well. And he would practice, and he would do fine. He tells me he cried quite a bit. I can't remember him crying. But anyway, I could tell he had a gift for music. And I also knew that with his special circumstances that it would help connect the two parts of his brain. It would be really good for his brain development. But at age 11, I had learned a few things, and I knew, and the Spirit prompted me to put it back on him and say, Brian, it's your choice whether you take piano lessons from this point on. One of the hardest things I ever brought myself to do, just to let go of that. He chose in, and he continued to study piano clear through his 18th year and when he went to college. And he continues to play and compose, and it's a part of his life, and it's a part of who he is. Now, when my second daughter came along, and she started piano at age 8, something about age 8, okay, but she said she wanted to take piano lessons, so we started her with piano, and after a while she said, I hate this, I don't want to take piano lessons anymore, and I figured, this is good for you, you need to keep going, this is good for you, just keep going. She said, I want to play the violin. I said, but I don't have a violin. I don't know how to do the violin. I have a piano. Do you want to play the piano? I don't want to play the piano. And so we struggled through that year, and finally, to put all of us out of our misery, I said, okay, end. But I didn't know how to do the violin, and it took me 3 years to come to the place where I could find out how to do the finances. It's kind of expensive, more expensive than a piano, and figure out how to do that. And the day she got her violin, she took it outside, took it out of its case, put it in her hands, and she says to this day, it just felt like part of me. So my fourth child came along, and we started him on piano, and he did okay, but he cried a lot. And he was young, he learned really quickly, but he cried a lot. And finally, I was pregnant with my seventh, I said, I'm done, we'll just stop. That was at age 8, he didn't make it very far. But when he was 10, he just said, oh Mom, it's the guitar, Mom. So we got him a guitar, found a guitar teacher, but finally we decided that guitar teacher really didn't hold the standards we wanted to. Long hippie ponytail, I don't know, kind of not a good situation. But at 11, he heard somebody else play the piano, He said, I want the piano. Boom. He plays music. He reads music for 2 hours, 3 hours. He loves to play the piano. And he just does it because he wants to. So key into what they want. Let them want and not always feel forced into doing things. Okay, so those are questions. And remember, with ask, be sincerely interested in them. Do you have a question?
I do.
Oh, go ahead.
Well,
this is totally your prerogative to say, this is what we do in our home. We serve, and this is one of the ways we serve. And that's totally okay.
So even if they don't like it, if I feel like
it's wrong, yeah, if you want it, they may not love it, they may not, but there will be something else that they might love.
Okay.
So with this, be sincere, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this obligation, because this is not about not expecting them to do things. It's not that at all. We can't have expectations. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. So you're going to be sincerely interested in them as you talk and you ask these questions. You can tell when someone says, hey, how are you doing, whether they really want to know or whether they just are doing that as a formality, okay? Isn't it wonderful to be with somebody who says, how are you? And they want, and they wait, and they look into your eyes, and they want that response. And what your goal is to come to understand them. And do not use questions to manipulate an outcome. Okay, this is so important. We've got an agenda. Oh, as parents, we have an agenda. We are so worried that they're not going to do what they need to do in order to survive and be successful. We are so concerned. If we could just understand that they inside have this desire to make it and to measure up and to grow and to be, they want to live fully. If we could just say, understand that, but we think if we don't make them, they won't do it. And we think that, they should be doing this, they should be doing that, and we don't give them a chance to come out of it. Okay, so no questions to manipulate. In this setting, it's just to understand. Listen. Listen to the voice tone. Okay, they can say something positive with a voice tone that tells you something totally different, right? Yeah. How are you? Fine. Okay. Or, how was the dance? It was good. Okay, body language, too. I'm using some body language. How was the dance? It was good. Okay. We listen to the body language, to the voice tone, what your child is saying. You listen to the words. It will help you understand who they are and what's going on with them. And you listen to what your child is not saying. I'm hoping that my notes can help me do this the right way. Okay. Just the other night, we were coming home from being at Grandma's house. It's about a 45-minute drive. And just to make things easier, I hopped in the back seat of our Suburban with my 12-year-old and my 6-year-old. And so I'm sitting in the middle of these two. And as we're driving home, Caleb, who's 12, begins to talk. Now, Caleb has a tendency to obsess about things. He has a tendency to be real negative about things and to see the world as just all... So he began to talk. And my first impulse was, I'm tired, and get over it, and could we just talk about positive things here? But instead I began to just listen to what he was saying. And he was saying things like, Mom, I just really want to be good at something. I'm just not good at anything. And the thing I really want to be good at is baseball, but we can't seem to make baseball work at our house. And he said, and then the way my brothers and sisters treat me, they treat me just not very nice. And I mean, sometimes that's how it is, but it's not all the time, you know. But he's overgeneralizing, and he's seeing this pattern. So my first impulse was to say, could we just talk about something positive? Could you just be quiet? Let's just go home. But instead, he had me cornered. There was no way I was going to be able to go anywhere, and he knew it. So he wanted to talk. This kid just wants to talk. And he likes to talk, and he needs to talk, and he needs that feedback. So as I listened to him to what he was saying and to what he wasn't saying. So his words were, he was on the negative side, but he was also saying, gosh, I need some reassurance, Mom. Am I okay? Can I do this? Do I measure up? That was what he wasn't saying. So we just began to carry on this dialogue, and I'm sorry I can't recreate the dialogue for you because I really can't. But I do know that he felt understood and that there was a feeling of, I love you, I care about you, you're safe to talk to me and I won't judge you. So we talked, and at the end of it, I was able to bring him full circle. I said, Caleb, we've talked about a lot of stuff. Is there something that, oh, this is what came out of it? He said, I'm just not feeling very happy. I said, well, what do you think's going on? I said, well, anyway, in the course of the conversation, I said, how's your scripture study? You were so good at scripture study. He said, we were talking about what he was good at. I kind of steered it. What are you good at? Because he was talking about what he wasn't good at. I said, you are so good at your scripture study. And he said, oh, yeah, but I haven't been doing that for about 4 weeks. I said, really? What do you think about that? I need to get back to that. So he right there said, I'm going to read my scriptures every day. And he said, but what happened was I started to write my journal. So every night I'd try to write my journal, but then I would be tired to read my scriptures and vice versa. And that's kind of how he got out of his scripture reading. I said, well, what could you do about it? He said, well, I guess I could read them in the morning. And we ended our conversation with his commitment this week to read for 20 minutes in the morning and that he could come and tell me about it. So that's what he did. And he knew when he was going to get up. And then we also ended with, Caleb, before you go to bed tonight, I want you to tell me 5 things that you're really good at. So when I tucked him in that night, he told me 5 things he was really good at. So that's kind of what happens when you listen and you really key in to what's going on. Respond. Okay, we're going to respond with full presence. We're going to give our full attention, like what I did with Caleb. I had to make a conscious choice to give it to him. I didn't want to at first, but I made a conscious choice. We're going to respond with clarifying questions. With Caleb, I said, so, you know, how's your scripture study? Oh, it's not so good. Well, tell me about that. Okay, why? So it's the clarifying questions. We also respond with intuition. And we can respond by teaching a skill, not a lecture, but teaching a skill. Now, whether or not Caleb knew it, I was teaching him a skill in our interaction. I was helping him to shift his thinking to a positive way of thinking. To instead of obsessing about what's not happening that he wants to have happen in his life, to look at what was good and then to create something he wanted to have happen in his life. He didn't realize that I was teaching him a skill. Another thing that works really well is to break it down into small pieces for them. Some kids just, most people, I mean, do you ever get overwhelmed and you really don't know what to do with it? And it's rattling all around in your brain and you go talk to somebody, you get off your chest, and suddenly it just feels like it's better. So I just want to share a few experiences that I've had that illustrate this model. So last year, about this time, my daughter, who was 18 then, Erin, she came to me one night. It was like 10 o'clock at night. That's when they like to talk the best. And she came into my bedroom, and she threw herself down on my bed, and she just said, it's just all so overwhelming. Okay, that's what she did. Okay, body language, voice tone, what she is saying. So I'm listening to her, and basically she had some big things coming up with her school, and she had a big recital that she was preparing for, and she had no clue where she was going to go to college. I mean, all these big decisions, life decisions that were overwhelming to her. So I heard, I listened, and I responded. I pulled out a piece of paper and a pencil, and I said, Erin, what's so overwhelming? Tell me. And I listed everything. It was a whole sheet. 26 or however many lines there are on a notebook piece of paper, and we listed the whole thing. Then I said, so, what can you do about this? See, I'm teaching her to solve her own problems. And we began with the top one, and we began to say, well, yeah, this assignment or whatever, I need to talk to that teacher. When are you going to talk to that teacher? Okay, tomorrow I'm talking to that teacher. Okay, great. What are you going to do about da-da-da? And we went through the whole list. By the time she was done, she was light and she had a plan and it was out of her head. That's the model. Listen, ask, respond, all kind of working together, and me asking and trying to find out what does she need. She needed help breaking it down into bite-sized pieces. One thing that's really interesting with mentoring with children, and you ask these questions, each one of them are going to give a different response, and it's kind of fun to see their uniqueness in this. So last spring, we were at Zion National Park, and we were camping, and we were actually on a trail, and I got this idea to ask each of my children what they wanted to create for the summer. So we're walking along the trail, and I asked John, who was 13 at the time, I said, "What do you want to create for your summer?" And he said, "I don't know." And I didn't push. I just said, "Hey, think about it. When you know, get back to me." "Okay, Mom." And a few days later, he came back to me and said, "Hey, Mom, I know what I want to create. I want a job because I'm trying to earn the money from my second degree black belt. And the bishop said that if I called him, that he would let me move pipe for him." "Great, John. Hey, when are you going to call the bishop?" "Oh, I can call him when we get home on Tuesday." "Great. Can I follow up on that? Can I ask you how that went?" "Sure, Mom." Can you see what's happening? And so that's what he wanted. Another son, we're walking along that Zion path, and he says, "I want to go to as many national parks as we can this summer, Mom." I don't know. Okay, well, we can do something about that. We didn't go to any more national parks, but he and I climbed 5 mountains together, and he got his hiking merit badge. I think that's equivalent to a lot of national parks. But basically what he was saying is, "I love this feeling of being on an adventure with you. Could we have some more adventures?" Okay, so I'm listening to what he is saying, what he's not saying even. Then my little Hannah, she was 5 at the time, we're walking along the trail. I said, "Hannah, what do you want to create this summer?" She said, "I want to go to high school." I thought, where did that come from? Because my older daughter had been in high school part-time, so she said, where did that come from? So you just have to roll with it. And by the time we'd finished our little walk, I had her convinced that it was okay for her to start kindergarten. She said, "What's kindergarten?" I said, "Well, this is what we get to do when you're in kindergarten." And, "Oh, that sounds fun, Mom. Okay, let's do that." Okay, not that we really technically do kindergarten at our house, but, you know. So you get a variety of answers. Isn't it beautiful that you get a variety of answers? And some of your children will be yellows, if you know the personality codes, or some of them will be red. Some of them will be blues and whites, and there's just this beautiful rainbow that can happen in a family. And you work with them each differently, which we don't have time to go into with how do you work with different personalities. But okay, let's see. I think I'll tell one more story and then move on to the roadblocks. But last August, we had a great big fireside as a kickoff for seminary. All the students who attend the seminary where my daughter goes went to this big fireside. It filled the entire stake center clear back. I mean, the whole thing was filled with parents and students. And it was a great meeting. And afterwards, I was just chatting because I know a lot of people and I like to talk. And my 16-year-old daughter is really social too, but I found that she was kind of off in the corner, really not talking to anybody. And I was wondering, what's up with this? So on the way home, it's 2 miles from our stake center to our house. On the way home, I said, "Laura, what are you thinking?" She said, "That I don't have very many friends." And we began to talk. Okay, so what I did was I responded to her. I listened to what she wasn't saying, and I asked a question. What happened was a 45-minute talk in front of our house. There were tears. It's a very real thing that our children struggle with socially, just because they have been socialized in a home with different values than those who have not been socialized in a home. And they care about meaningful things, at least my children do, and they have a hard time connecting with students who don't care about the same things that they care about. It's a real thing that they struggle with. But we talked for 45 minutes. This was very real. I said, "Well, would you like to take some classes at the high school so you could meet some people?" High school's 2 miles from our house, a mile from our house. She said, "No, I want a quality education." So I thought, okay, I liked that idea, but anyway, but I wanted to open that to her. Well, then what can you do to create more social in your life? Do you see how I put it back on her? I'm teaching her how to self-lead. What can she do about it? It puts her in the creator role, not the victim role. I can do something about this. So by the time we finished, she had three things she was going to do that week that would create some social opportunities for her. And she's been quite a bit better ever since. So that's what we're working for. Now, I haven't even talked about how you actually structure a mentor meeting or how you have regular mentor meetings. We're going to get to that in just a few minutes. So here are some roadblocks that we as parents just tend to have. Okay, it's so easy to jump into these, but these behaviors stop the flow. What we want to do is keep the flow. We want to have this ask, listen, respond flow going. We want to be asking, what do they need, and being open to them. But these behaviors stop this flow. Moralizing. Well, you know, if you just wouldn't be on Facebook so much, you'd have plenty of time to do your math. Okay? Shouldering, kind of pushing them to do what we think they should be doing. It's that agenda. You've got to be doing this. You've got to be doing that. You know, some of the greatest people that ever lived had parents who didn't believe they could be a musician, didn't believe they could be a great scientist. I know that a great author, let's see, Harper Lee, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, her father wanted her to be an attorney. Her older sister was an attorney. He was an attorney, and he wanted her to be an attorney. She tried. She went to law school. She tried, but she was a writer. And so she finally just had to say, sorry, Dad, I'm a writer, and went off to New York to write. Wouldn't it be so much better if the parents said, oh, yeah, you're not an attorney. You're a writer. You know? Lecturing, judgment, thinking that, this judgment, this should, it should look different. You should be doing more. You should be doing less. You should. And you know, we get ourselves into a lot of trouble with that, Even when we do it to ourselves, it's just not very much fun. Criticism, whenever you use criticism, the walls just go up and the person crouches behind them to protect themselves. So criticism needs to go down. Acceptance is really important. Having those ulterior motives of what we want them to do, blaming them, and then just rushing, just having too much going on and say, okay, got to have a mentor meeting. Okay, let's hurry and have a mentor meeting. Let's go. Come on. Okay. And you don't have time, or you don't take the time to just, this child needs some time. Now, this rushing thing, I had a beautiful experience in the fall with my daughter who's here, Lara. She's a flutist, and we went on a tour with her flute teachers and all of her students, and we went to San Francisco. It was the greatest thing. I'd never done something like this, where I just took a trip for fun, and I took a trip just to be with my daughter. I actually paid like $800 just to go have fun and to be with her, and I was so worried about spending that money. But the first day I made my first payment, I went, oh, that feels so right. Now, if it were for that $800 was totally worth it for one particular time on that trip. So we had been seeing sights all day, and it was late, and we were coming home on the bus back to our motel, and I was reading with a little light, and she looked like she was sleeping, and we're sitting there. I'm reading, and all of a sudden she opens her eyes and says, Mom, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, sure. Put my book away, and we just began to talk, and she had some questions. And they were questions, I think they were boy-girl questions. I think there was, you know, quite a few little deeper questions like that. And I thought how beautiful this was. And then I realized how little we have this at home. That it takes time away from the normal humdrum of every day in order to create that kind of connection. So parents, that's what's so important, and we need to take time, not every day perhaps with older children, but enough that they know that we're there for them. So time is really important. Okay, I want to talk for a minute about what it's like to mentor younger children versus what it's like to mentor older children. And what I've got here are things that, to me, I focus on as I mentor my children. Remember that mentoring is somebody who's a little further along in the path, has an expertise, and is helping someone to get that expertise. So when I'm mentoring and working with my younger children, I am doing it as we work. I am doing it as we play. I create opportunities to talk and to discuss if we're reading something or if something just happened, if we're struggling with something. I mentor them in how to handle responsibility. You know, oh, Hannah, it's your job to set the table. If you don't set the table, I don't want to set the table. I'm busy playing. Well, if you don't set the table, we can't eat dinner. Oh, okay. So I'm mentoring her in what it is to hold responsibility. I'm mentoring them in obedience, teaching them to say, okay, yes, Mom, I will. It's important to teach them. I'm teaching, and I'm also mentoring them in respect. What it is to be a sister or a brother, what it is to belong to a family, how to know what's right, how to correct a mistake when you make one. Okay, this is, to me, this is the curriculum of younger children. And I do this a lot. I'm going to leave this up for just a second. I do this a lot with reading classics to them and just the natural interchange of our life. Now, I also like to have mentor meetings with younger children. My baby, who is 6, loves this because she's seen me do it with all the older children. And what's really fun is when I say, okay, I'm going to be in my office, which is out back underneath a tree in a lawn chair, in a camp chair, and a camp chair next to me, and I'm going to take time to talk with each of you. And she can't wait for her turn, and I just have this cute memory of her a couple years ago, just sitting in her camp chair, so excited, just beaming, and her little feet can't even reach the ground, just like this, and we're just talking, Hannah, what are you excited about? Da-da-da-da-da. Hannah, what do you want to do? Da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, just this. And now I see her. She'll wake up in the morning sometimes and she'll say, today I'm going to read my Tuggy books and I'm going to write to Grandma and Grandpa and I'm going to, she's just taking, because these are questions that I ask my older children, what are you going to do today? What are you going to create today? So I just think the more we can put them in the creator role versus this is what you have to do in the passive role, it's just really powerful. So so I do have mentor meetings with them, but they look different and what we talk about is different. And for example, one Sunday I was trying to have mentor meetings. I'd had them with my older children. I didn't have time to do them with my younger children. So I was last ditch effort. I was tucking them into bed and I said I have two boys in the same bedroom. I said, so I told the story yesterday, so I'm not going to tell the whole thing, but that I asked one of them, so what do you want to accomplish this week? And this little 8-year-old boy said, I hate my reading books. So we had this little conversation about, you know what, you're ready to read chapter books. And we got him into a chapter book, and he was so excited. Well, I went to the bed next to his brother, who was 10. I said, Caleb, what do you want to accomplish this week? You know, remember, this is a last-ditch effort for some kind of mentor meeting because of just the way the day fell out. He said, I want to build a catapult and make a bow and arrow. And I said, oh, gosh. In my mind, I'm seeing visions of getting on the internet, ordering, you know, these kits, getting instructions, going to the hardware, you know, the Home Depot, getting all that stuff, thinking, oh, that is going to take so much time. Well, that was the last I thought about it until Friday when I got home. I think I'd gone to the temple and I'd been gone for about 4 hours. And I drove into my driveway, and there on the patch of lawn behind my driveway were my 3 boys, 12, 10, and 8. They had built an 8-foot catapult. And they were slinging rocks this big, about 20 feet. And I realized this was kind of dangerous, and I was worried about the windows. But they were in their glory. They were having an awesome time. Now, I don't know if it was my question that actually brought him to action, but wow, how cool is that? I didn't have to do a darn thing. I just got to go, wow, how cool is what you just built? And then he said, hey, Mom, look at this. And then he got his bow and arrow out. Boom, and that arrow flew 30 feet, his own little homemade bow and arrow. Flew much better than bow and arrow we bought him the year before for Christmas, you know? So it was amazing to me. But just that's kind of just that little interchange, getting connected, what do you want, what are you doing? So with little children, it's just different. But there still is so much teaching going on. And we'll talk about mentor meetings in just a minute. So with mentoring younger children, classics teach the power of story in ways we cannot ever hope to accomplish through moralizing, lecturing, and shouldering. When we use classics, my goodness, it teaches them things that we cannot just say, okay, you need to be nice, okay? You need to be nice. And then they read a story about children who aren't being nice, and they go, oh, they can see it, and they remember it, and they learn it. Classics are a great, powerful way to mentor your children. in choosing their very best self. Also, reading classics together helps children to learn sound principles upon which to build their lives. Honestly, I don't think I could read enough to my children to get all that I want into their experience, into their life. So reading is just a great way to mentor them. And then when they ask a question while you're reading the book, that's when they're ready. That's when they want to learn. Mentoring older children, I don't know, are you getting this? I might be going kind of fast.
Could you name a couple classics that you love for children?
Sure, I love Little Princess. I love Little Lord Fauntleroy. I love The Trumpet of the Swan. I could just go on and on forever and ever. I read the full thing. Now, you need to know that as you read to your children, you are developing their language. If you've ever heard, I can't remember his name, Andrew Poudois, he talks about how his language and his ability to write came from his parents reading to him, and reading to him from something that was a little bit harder than he could understand. And it's sad that when children get to be about 10 or 11, we quit reading to them so they can read on their own. We should continue to read to them and read to them from something just a little bit ahead of their ability. But they not only learn moral principles, but they're also learning language. My children have been very verbal, very articulate, and as when they get to be 13, 14, 15, they can write.
This is odd, but my children have been, we public school right now. My youngest is 7. He went through kindergarten, public school, first grade public school, and I want you to know he's the one I have read the least to, and he is my latest reader.
Interesting.
Just letting you know, yeah. Read to your children, you get a reader.
Yeah. And the cool thing about reading the classics with them is it creates the opportunity to mentor them. They ask questions. They have this experience. It really does. Okay, quick questions here.
Do you teach writing directly, or does it come through their
reading? The way I teach writing is not your Andrew Poudois style. So if you know anything about him, I tried that once. It doesn't work for me, and it's okay that it doesn't work for me. But what works for me is I created a little scholar group, and they read classics and they write a paper about it. They write what they learned from the book, and the first paper my kids ever write is usually this: tell me what you learned and I type it up. Tell me what anything you want to tell me about that book and I type it up. But basically I want to see that they're thinking, that they've got content. I don't care about the spelling or the punctuation or the penmanship. But what I've noticed is my children, almost all of them, by the time they're 15 and 16, spell well. They have good grammar. I can start working with them on those things as they write. And the content is excellent. So all of my kids have become very good writers, the three older ones. So really quick question, because we need to move on.
Can you just briefly explain what you mean by shouldering again?
Shouldering is kind of pushing them to do what you want them to do. Let me just offer this. I really want to get through the content that I have here. I will be outside that door throughout the entire day, except for maybe an hour when I need to go prepare my last presentation. So I'm open to all of your questions. Just come to me, please, and ask your questions there. The bad thing about that is other people can't learn from your question, and I might repeat myself 1,000 times, but I don't care. But I really want to get through this. So mentoring older children. These are some of the things that I am mentoring my children in. How to manage their time. Solving problems and being a creator. I'm working with them on making and keeping commitments and being accountable, on setting goals, creating direction and goals in their lives. Learning to submit. This is so important. Learning to submit is something that we all need to learn. And we go through this little children phase, and at some point they have to say, okay, I'm ready to do the hard thing, and I need to do the hard thing. With little children, it's a lot of what do I want to learn? With older children, it's what do I want to learn, but what do I need to learn even though I don't want to learn it because it's hard. Okay, we have to help them do that and get them through that. Learning to tackle hard things, learning to do what is needful, not just what is fun, learning to become mission and service oriented, not just focused on self, and a lot of discussing what they're learning, a lot of talking. The best counsel I ever got from a parent, before I was even a parent, was talk with them a lot. Talk a lot. Okay, just really quickly, one of my sons was really good at managing his time and everything when he was 12, But something happened when puberty hit, and when he was 13, it was like chaos in his room and chaos in his mind and chaos everywhere. So for a couple of years, we've just been working on time management. And he'll list at the beginning of the week what's important to him, what he needs to accomplish, and then I coach him in when he starts to plug it into his week, when he's going to do it, and I follow through with him at the end of the week to find out, you know, how did it go? Did you get what you needed to done? And that kind of thing.
How do you not even do that at the mentor meeting? So then you just keep that out and have separate meeting about, okay?
We usually have more of a chore meeting as a family. Like, this is your job, this is your responsibility, this is how I want it to work. And I'm totally expecting and requiring and even shouldering, if you will, because that's part of their responsibility of being in our home.
That's not one.
No, not usually. Unless they're having trouble being responsible with it. I want to share a story. Brett and Alex Harris wrote a book called Do Hard Things. This is an awesome book for teens. Now, they were homeschooled, and I want to show you how this works. They were homeschooled, and their dad, one summer, it was the summer between their junior and senior year, they were looking forward to a summer of fishing and camping and having a great time. Their dad did something that was so life-changing for them. He handed them a stack of books this tall, thick, hard books. He said, I want you to read these books this summer. They did, okay? He's getting them to tackle hard things, and he could see in them something they couldn't see in themselves. They tackled those hard books. I read some of them. I mean, things about blogging, things about, I mean, basically what he was, and they started a movement called Revolution against the low expectations of the teens. And they are leading thousands and thousands of teens to rise to their own expectations, to lift themselves, to be better and be more and be who they were born to be rather than this, just make your bed and stay out of trouble. That's really the expectation people have of teens. Make your bed, take the trash out, and don't drink, don't do drugs, stay out of trouble. He said, they're saying, no, there is so much more we can do, and it's amazing. If you read that book, it's amazing. But that's an example of a parent who said, I have a vision for my children. We have this relationship that's going really well. I know that they can make and keep commitments. I know that they can tackle hard things, and I'm going to encourage them to tackle this hard thing. That's okay. Don't be afraid of that. Okay, there is no one right way to mentor, okay? I've talked to so many parents, they said, they think it has to be with mom and dad together, they think it has to be a certain amount of time, and that it has to be every Sunday. Okay, let me just say there are a variety of ways to do it. First of all, a mom and a dad can do it at different times in their own way. I've heard of a dad who says, if I try to sit down and have a formal mentor meeting with my daughter, she just shuts up. But if we talk while she's doing the dishes, we're doing them together, it works great. Okay? So you have to find what works best for you. There is some advantages to having something set aside. For example, on a Sunday afternoon, the kids know that they're going to get to talk to their dad or their mom. They can look forward to it. They can anticipate it. And mom knows, yeah, I'm going to talk with them at mentor meeting. But there's also some beauty in just spontaneous. And then it also gets done if you've carved out the time. This is when we're going to do it. So okay. I have supposed to stop, so I'm going to stop really quickly here in just a minute. So there's the formal mentor meeting that's done on a weekly basis or a monthly basis at a certain time. There's also the spontaneous meetings that just happen as you're living your life together. Like what I had with my daughter coming home from that seminary meeting. It was a spontaneous mentor meeting. I find that that's my strength. And then the informal meetings where it's just like side by side, you're doing the dishes or you're working together, and it's just maybe that spontaneous, the same thing, I'm not sure, but you can do it however it works for the personality of your children and for your personality as well. The key is that you do connect with them, that you do create this time. Maybe it's as simple as going in and saying prayer with them every night and making sure, how are you? You will know what is needed. Oops, I guess that's it. The last thing I want to share is that this influence is a lasting influence that you can have. I want to share just in closing that when I was a teenager, I was heavily involved in athletics, and I played basketball. My dad had also played basketball, and he was really good. So he would come to my games, and at the end, after the games, we'd go home, and we would have these debriefs on my game. And he would coach me, and he would say, when you're open, you've got to shoot the ball. And I'd say, I know, but I hate to miss it, and I want to make sure I'm going to make it. He's like, when you're open, you've got to shoot the ball. If you don't, it hurts your team. And he would coach me. He said, and I'd say, so keep shooting. So I'd keep shooting, and I'd miss. Keep shooting, and I'd miss. Keep shooting. The next one you'll make. Every time you shoot a basket, you're that much closer to making it. If you don't shoot, you're never going to make it. You know, all these little gems of wisdom that he taught me in these little interchanges. And he would also have PPIs with me. And he'd say, how are you physically? How are you emotionally? How are you mentally? And he would just check up with me. And I don't know how many times we did that. I don't know if it was once. I don't know if it was 50. I don't know. But I do know that it had an impact on me, so much so that just a little while ago I had an experience where I totally shot an air ball in a teaching environment. I mean, I really flopped. It just was thud, thud, thud. Everybody knew it was a thud. And I especially knew it was a thud. And I remembered his words, keep shooting the ball. Every time you shoot, you're that much closer to making it. His wisdom came back to me. So what I want to say, this is creating something that will go with your children through their life and into the eternities. It's worth the effort now. And like Louisa May Alcott said, it will avoid tears and problems later on if we can create this kind of a relationship with our children. That's mentoring your children. Again, I will be available for questions.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.